Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and once again, Leslie Appleton-Young is with us. Leslie is Vice President and Chief Economist for the California Association of Realtors, a statewide trade organization with about 155,000 members dedicated to the advancement of professionalism in real estate. Leslie directs the activities of the association's member information group. She oversees the analysis of housing market and brokerage industry trends. Leslie, welcome back.
Thank you, Bruce. Nice to be here.
Kind of off-air in between segments, we were talking about the financing and having FHA. FHA actually was a less of a factor in 2012, I noticed on your chart. Not still a big factor and way above what they were in the, you know, let's say 2000 to 2006, but actually did maybe less percentage of loans in 2012 than they did in 2011 and 2010. Is that true?
It is, and I think it just reflects the inventory situation that you've got your FHA buyer at a disadvantage in this market. So as inventory has fallen and competition for what is there has intensified, it's the all-cash buyer. It's not the low-down payment buyer that's going to win in those multiple offer situations. And you've got at least half of the properties that sell in California have multiple offers. And I know you've probably heard the stories, as I have, you know, people saying, you know, this property went 25% over list and there were 40 offers. I mean, I hear those kind of stories all the time. So it's very competitive out there.
One of the things that, you know, we kind of got used to very easy financing in the, you know, the 2000 to 2006, let's say. And there's just this idea that, and of course it is harder to get a loan, but one of the things that's much more generous is the loan amount for FHA. So we're at a 366 median price. And back in the 90s, when prices were at this number, the loan amount for FHA, I think, maxed out at $160,000.
You know, I don't remember the exact number, but that sounds right. Absolutely. I just remember FHA just wasn't a factor because most of the properties were priced above that limit.
Yeah, we actually always liked when they raised the limit in Riverside, because back then we were kind of there. It seemed like whenever the median price bumped up, our prices ran to meet it because the sale was going to be most likely an FHA buyer. And now, I think FHA's loan limit in Riverside's 500, double what the median price is, and 700 in Orange County, double the median price of the state.
Right.
That's very generous.
Yep.
And that's one announcement I would not like to see.
No. But I mean, it's a more attractive program, but it's not effective in the marketplace that we're facing right now, again, because of the competition from all cash.
Yeah, and I think it's what you said is very, very true about where the inventory usually comes from, and now it's not. The buy and hold investor is keeping that. They would have sold, you know, to an FHA buyer left and right.
Oh, absolutely.
But right now, it is more profitable to hold it, or we're buying less of it. That's a big part of it. We do a fair amount of loans, and I would say half of our loans now are people that want to hold the same inventory that they would have sold.
Right.
And some of the big companies that are our competitors that are buying a lot more than we are
right,
selling none of those.
Right.
So that has been a big change. What are the agents feeling out there? Are they feeling that there's really an upswing coming and that the buyers are excited, or there's just frustration that they can't get anything for them or clients?
Well, I think they're definitely in a much better state than they were a year or two ago. Absolutely, but it is a challenging market to work because things are just, you know, it's so competitive, you know, and it's very competitive to get listings. Appraisals tend to lag in any turn of the market, so you have appraisal issues coming up where when there is financing involved, the appraisal isn't coming in, and yet the buyer and seller have agreed on a significantly higher price. So there's just a lot of issues. I'm happy to report that we've got, you know, more short sales happening much faster. It's about 25% of the total market. And while there's still some frustration, it's definitely better. And I think the lenders in general are doing a much better job of moving things through quickly. So it's not a perfect market, but it's a market. You know, it's a market that's moving.
Well, it sure beats what we've been through.
Oh, absolutely.
08 and 09.
Perspective is very helpful.
it definitely is. One of the names that pops up into the news all the time is a gentleman named Robert Shiller, who's a smart gentleman. This is a quote of his recently. It says, "If you think investing in housing is such a good idea, why not invest in cars? Buy a car, mothball it, and sell it in 20 years." This is the gentleman that, you know, came out with his statement about irrational exuberance and so forth. But he really thinks housing is not a very smart investment. And I've tried to interview him because I would really love to challenge that one, but I haven't had the chance. But are there people that buy into that?
Well, you know, I actually just was listening a few days ago to an interview that he did recently and was kind of called upon to defend himself in terms of being so negative given how strong the data has been. And he really, I think, clarified that he's not negative. He's just being cautious, right? And he's just kind of looking at long-term trends and wondering how long rates are going to stay this low, how long investors are going to be engaged in the market. So he's just urging caution, given the kind of long-term perspective that he has over the last 20 years or so and what's happened in the market. And I, you know, it's interesting. When I was at the Federal Reserve Bank of Philadelphia, I was his research assistant for a while. And I will tell you, he is, you know, someone that you have to really pay attention to because he's thoughtful. And I think, you know, you look back to the irrational exuberance quote, and he was pretty much right on the money. So I think the issue is not that the market is strong and very responsive right now. I think, again, the question is, as you look out over the next 2 to 3 to 4 years, what is going to happen to the properties that are owned by investors? What is going to be happening to housing prices? And certainly from my perspective, I tend to be more optimistic and positive as I look at California and, you know, the demographic trends, the pent-up demand, the fact that housing starts are still relatively low in this state compared to the pent-up demand. I mean, I can point to all kinds of reasons, but, you know, the economy works in strange ways, so I think we do have to kind of pay a little bit of attention to some of the new things in this cycle that we haven't ever seen before. And I do think the investor component, of course, one of the things is the data is not very, very clean and aggregated in an easy way to be able to answer the question, you know, who owns what mm-hmm. and how much and for how long.
When you make a statement, and again, I'm always disagreeing with people that are brighter than I am, honestly.
Right,
so,
right.
And it drives me crazy because I'm well-intentioned and I know they are. How can we land it on a different page? Sean O'Toole and I go around about that type of thing, and we trust each other's motives perfectly, and sometimes we end up in a different space. And so it's kind of fun. So, you know, whenever you disagree with a Robert Shiller, but, you know, when you talk about being cautious, to me, cautious would be, okay, I've got a chance to lock up a payment to reside somewhere at an all-time low and do that for 30 years where it doesn't change.
Right.
That would seem to be very cautious. And I don't care what happens in the short term in that sense, because one thing I can probably predict pretty well is rents will not stay stagnant for the next 30 years.
No.
And so that's why it seems like irregardless of what happens to price, if your payment is fixed, then you will feel less of that weight over time. You will be able to have a better life having, what do you call it, discretionary money far in excess of somebody that's renting at the current rate every year.
Right. No, I can't disagree with you. I agree with you 100%.
Yeah.
You know, it's just very frustrating for people that want to do what you're describing and aren't able to.
Yeah.
In
general, are people getting different length of loans than would normally be? You know, you'd think everything's 30-year, but then you listen to the radio and it's a 10-year, or it's almost create your own mortgage, yorgage, they call it, you know.
Right.
There
is more of that because you've got people refinancing that are, you know, looking at their retirement horizon. So you've got more of the 10-year and 15-year, especially at these very, very low rates. I mean, for a while, some of that stuff was at one, you know, less than 2%. So yes, you've got a lot more diversity in terms of time frames than you did in the past, and that makes a lot of sense for people. They're trying to prepare for the for their future.
And I think we're not thinking about how fantastic this is going to play out 20 years from now, when people have these low interest rate mortgages and they've been able to participate in more spending in the economy, and they end up with no house payment much sooner than they would have ever before.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, again, it's a big country. Markets are behaving differently depending on what areas you go to. And I think the concern would be just the areas where you have a very, very high investor-owned percentage and you don't have a strong economic base to kind of prop it up. And I think that's, you know, where I look at the kind of weak link, if you will. When are we going to see this economy really kick in and start to create, create jobs for this next generation?
Well, for one of the factors that has to happen in California is you have to have prices accelerate to where it pencils to construct something.
Right.
And I think that's what 2013 is about.
I think you're going to see that.
But one of the things that is happening simultaneously with that, and what you kind of mentioned, is it's hard to see past what you're feeling right now, is developers are developing 5% of the amount of lots in Riverside and San Bernardino than is normal. 5%.
Wow.
So there's no way building will catch up until they create building lots. And unfortunately, building lots creation hasn't gotten easier. It's gotten a little bit, you know, more involved, and they're 2 or 3 years away from a building lot.
Right.
So when you start looking at Riverside normally creating 35,000, I forget the number, honestly, off the top of my head, but they're 5% of those and now is what's
that's
being created.
That's a stunning
creative
number.
It is, and that's it comes
and
from,
that's going to affect economic development if people can't, you know, live close to take advantage of the jobs.
Well, we have existing lots, you know, but once we go through those, I think they're going to be surprised that, wow, there might be a gap. And that's why I feel like the prices that of existing homes will accelerate, because there won't be whatever percentage normally the new home market will be. It'll be hamstrung because of no building lots being created for 5 years.
Wow.
So,
yeah.
One of the charts that kind of surprised me was the percentage of sellers losing money reached an all-time high in 2012, and I guess that's the emergence of the short sale.
It is. And you had an acceleration of the proportion of short sales out of the total amount. So that kind of, I don't want to say skewed that number, but that's what that number represents. And my guess is you're going to start to see that go down as the appreciation that we saw last year continues to accelerate, you know, mm-hmm. very, very dramatically.
Well, you know, the assumption too would be, okay, well, all those people that lost money on their home can't be buyers, but that's not true.
No. They're going to be back in the market, or they're going to just stay where they are. I mean, we're seeing a lot more, principal reduction, loan modifications happening, and people just deciding to stay put. So when you're looking at over 2 million mortgages, there's a lot of room for a variety of responses. But there's no doubt that the price appreciation that we're seeing is going to push some of them out and push some of them to stay in.
If I decide to do a short sale, but I'm current on my loan, it's my understanding that I can get an FHA loan right after the closing of that.
Absolutely.
So,
and if we see the Boxer bill go through, you're going to be able to have been current on your payments and take advantage of a a refinance, even if it's not a Fannie Freddie loan. So if we see that go through, and it was alluded to in the State of the Union address, that's going to help help people as well. So, you know, the stabilization of the housing market is indisputable at this point. It's been that way in California for the last 2 years, and now I think looking at last year, you can say that for the nation as a whole.
Well, also obviously important to the short sale business and getting it finally through, you know, the end of this crisis and get on to a normal market is the fact that they extended the mortgage debt forgiveness.
Right, right. So you've got that extended through the end of 2013. So that was huge. That was the one part of the fiscal cliff negotiations that we were pushing very, very hard. And of course, now that that's done and we're going to start looking at tax reform, the next issue that will be back on the front burner is going to be the mortgage interest deduction.
Well, you know, and it brings up a broader topic of representation for our industry. You know, that's what National Association of Realtors and now California Association of Realtors and Mortgage Bankers Association, you know, all of them are going to bat for an industry during a time where lots of people are looking at real estate and saying, well, we can take a lot of goodies from this segment. And we're trying to say, maybe you shouldn't do that.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think the argument is a really strong one, and that is, you know, the housing sector is back. It's leading the rest of the economy. Don't do anything to put the brakes on. That doesn't make any sense at all. But all that being said, the political reality is when they go in behind closed doors and look at tax reform, everything is going to be on the table. And as we've gone to Washington and talked to the California congressional delegation, there's tremendous support for not touching it. But again, you go in, and for anyone that remembers 1986, you know, the last time we had had this situation, you know, we were good until the final hours, and then all of a sudden you had a $1 million dollar cap. So we have been mobilized, and we will be even more so as we go into this session. But the imbalances between, you know, revenue and expenditures are significant and are going to require some creativity to get through.
And real estate does seem to have some of the goodies that they could make some revenue from. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, right.
One of the rules I've always been surprised that have stayed in place is that you can make $250,000 and $500,000 on the sale of your residence every 2 years tax free.
Right.
When you have tax increases for people that are making a lot of money, do you think it has a chance to skew people to buy an expensive residence literally for the sole purpose of it's one of the few ways that I can make a lot of money and they can't take it?
Well, I think it depends on how you're projecting price appreciation over the time period that you're going to own the home. You know, I don't think it would be a kind of a short-term strategy, right? It would take a long time in order to gain that much equity in a home bought today. But clearly, what, you know, we saw at the end of last year, the December sales were inflated, and they were inflated at the upper end as you had high net worth individuals pushing to close transactions before you had, you know, an increase in capital gains or a thought that would happen. So certainly, you know, financial decisions as big as home ownership are impacted by tax rates. But I just think looking at that, the exclusion on capital gains has got to be it's going to be a longer term strategy.
Okay. In 2005, I remember reading a report from California Association of Realtors or National Association of Realtors, and it had to do with the reason people bought in 2005, and it was to make a profit.
Right.
Reason to buy in 2012?
Home ownership.
Okay. So we're back to a normal reason?
Right. Well, and unless you were just surveying investors, right, and then it would be yield and cash flow.
Mm-hmm. Which is, the market is 30% cash buyers?
That's right.
Wow.
That's right.
I don't know the history of that chart. So
it's very high historically compared to what we've had in the past.
I mean, has it ever been there?
No.
Okay. That makes
not
sense.
Not with our data.
Okay. That makes perfect sense to me. That's an outrageous number. And it feels that way. I mean, it does feel like there's more cash than you could ever imagine waiting on the sidelines to do something.
Right.
What do you think the future of Fannie Freddie is? And do we need them?
We need something, and whatever they do needs to be done very slowly. 2012, 87% of the new originations were bought by Fannie or Freddie. So they are the mortgage market. And any transition away from the GSEs, you know, the government support to the private market is going to be at significantly higher rates. So I don't think there's anyone that can tell you what this is going to look like. There's not even a proposal really on the table. There's been a couple of white papers that have come out over the last couple of years, one from the Treasury, one from the FHFA. But it's a big, complicated issue. I don't think anything's going to happen in 2013. But going forward, I think it really is the issue of this era for the future of the housing market, because, you know, if you don't get a mortgage, you really aren't going to need the mortgage interest deduction. So the availability of capital at a reasonable rate that is currently insured by that construct with the GSEs is going to have to be dealt with very carefully. And I think it is my biggest policy concern looking ahead.
Do we know what Dodd-Frank now entails completely? Is it all done and going to be implemented in January of 2013 if it's not already done?
You know, I think they're still working through. Some of the things have come out, QM and so on, but there's still other things that are still being defined. So it's still a little bit of a work in progress, obviously very political and contentious, but work in progress.
And are we solving yesterday's problem sometimes with policies that are no longer really necessary?
You know, Bruce, I think there are a lot of people that would agree with that. I think, you know, Dodd-Frank was negotiated and developed in good faith. But, you know, everything that you attempt to do to regulate and avoid what happened in the past creates new challenges for the future. So I think it's something you need to think about very, very carefully. You know, there were a lot of things that led to the crash, and maybe the biggest one just isn't really an issue right now, which is that you really need to be qualified today to get a mortgage. And like you alluded to, how easy it was in 03, 04, and 05, and that certainly isn't the case today, and maybe that's going to make the biggest difference of all.
Well, I think when they look back, they probably have written the safest book of loans in 2011 and 2012 without a down payment requirement of 20%.
Absolutely.
And I hope they recognize that.
Yeah. I mean, you look at, you know, all the issues with FHA right now. Well, it's certainly not the book that they have for the last 2 or 3 years. It really is what came before. What they've done recently looks fabulous.
Right. And that's you just don't have a market typically that goes down the way we did. We've got about 45 seconds. One thing that could impact California a lot is if we have some kind of immigration forgiveness like we had in the Reagan era. Do you see that impacting California as far as households that are all of a sudden capable?
Yeah, and I think the general economic analysis of immigration reform is that it's positive, you know, that you're going to have people investing in education, paying more taxes, being more engaged in the community, and so on. They're here already. So immigration reform, I think the net outcome is going to be very positive for the future and the economic growth of the state.
Well, Leslie, thank you so much for joining us again. Go to www.car.org. Leslie, again, thanks.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.